It's Anxious and Angry, Episode 3, the Comedy Edition. Have you ever made it rain on a cat or enjoyed the movie Heartbreakers? I have both today.
The dollar dances on our asses!
Welcome back to episode 3. I'd like to say thank you to everybody once again. I got a barrage of emails yesterday, or maybe not yesterday. I guess just after the last episode. They've been coming in pretty steadily, and that's awesome. Everybody seems to be digging it. Everybody likes to share their problems and all that. I still have yet to get any funny stories, mostly just sad stuff, which is good. That's what this is for. But I like to mix it up a little bit because not every day is as terrible as I make it seem like it is. So yeah, this episode is my friend JT Habersat. I sat in the van with him when we were in Austin, Texas, the day before South by Southwest. That was a privilege for me to talk to him and to also not be at South by Southwest, my least favorite event of the year in the music business. There's some pretty crazy shit that happened this year, though. That drunk guy mowed down a row of people. That is, that's super fucked up. To anyone who thinks it's a good idea to drink and drive, it isn't. I've done it most of my life. And, at some point you just kind of realize probably shouldn't do that. Everyone thinks they're okay to do it, but you're not, ever. And remember, a cab is, you know, what, 30, 40 bucks, sometimes 60 bucks, DUI, DWI in some places. That's going to run you about $10,000, plus a stamp, which I would not call a badge of honor. Anyway, that's a lecture. I'm not a lecturing kind of person. Don't be a piece of shit. That's the big one. In my interview with JT, we talk a little bit about South by Southwest. Yeah, not much because I don't really care enough about it. But he talks a little bit about taking some medicine and things like that. And I don't want this to be like a one-trick pony where we just go directly into people's craziness and insecurities and all of that. But it is fun to get people to admit to that, so I'm going to continue to try and do that while still showing an interesting side of everybody else, you know? I started to notice when in the last episode with Corpse Grinder that as soon as you strike something that people get a little bit uncomfortable with, they go, and I think JT does that too, so pay attention to that. I think that's going to be a thing I'm going to start calling people out on, where I'm like, I got you. I finally got you. So that's about it. Everyone's been asking when my website is going to be done. It is done. We had one little snafu with the podcast feed and the site itself. So until it's ready, it's going to be anxiousandangry.bigcartel.com. It's not just a store. It has everything else. But anyone who's ever wanted or said, come up to me and was like, how can I help you directly without giving money to anyone else? This is the way. This is the way to do it. Go to anxiousandangry.bigcartel.com, pick something up. If you want me to make it out to your cousin, I have gold, silver markers, gold, diamond, platinum markers, maybe. No, they're just Sharpies. They're gold and silver. And that's even too nice. But yeah, I can do whatever. It's all sitting here in my room. I'm excited to finally get this stuff out there. But yes, tell a friend also. I'd like to say that the first episode of this podcast actually charted on iTunes, which is crazy, in the top 100. Charted at number 50. That's pretty good for a big, dumb, fat schmuck like me. So thank everybody for that. Tell someone else. Tell them to go to the store. Tell them to download the podcast. Tell them to send me some hate mail if that's what that's what floats your boat. I haven't gotten too much of that yet. One, but it happens. I expect that. So I'm going to get into my talk with JT after we hear a song. This is a rock and roll punky jam from a band from Albuquerque called Stabbed in Back. We played with them on the Menzingers tour, and they were great. So I wrote them. They sent me a song. This is Ivy League by Stabbed in Back on Anxious and Angry Radio. Welcome back to Anxious and Angry. I am here with my friend JT Habersat.
What's up?
You run the Altercation Punk Comedy Tour, just correct? And me slurring is because I've...
Drinking?
Well, I didn't eat today.
Ah, good for you. I'm fat. I'm getting fat.
We'll get into what you do after we set the scene, because this scene is hilarious. I'm in the mobile studio, also known as the van. And we are in Austin, Texas at the moment.
I just got off stage.
And would this be called the calm before the storm?
For you, maybe. This is the fucking rest of my night.
No, I don't mean the night. I mean what's about to happen in this town.
Oh, South by Southwest? Yeah. That didn't even enter into my brain equation.
Are you a fan of South by Southwest?
You know, as much... I feel like it's jumped the shark big time by this point, but I can't really shit talk it too much because it's what got me down here.
That's
came to
cool.
South By, and they were really cool to me when I was doing Altercation Magazine, like gave us free wristbands and passes and stuff. And that's how I kind of discovered Austin, so I can't really bitch about South By too much. And, you know, all the unofficial stuff is awesome. You
don't. It is. Actually, the only time we did this a year ago, mm-hmm. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you did our Altercation Punk Rock Barbecue.
And I was just going to tell you that was literally the only, like, few minutes of fun that I had.
Oh, awesome,
was
man.
When I was there for, a couple of hours.
Yeah.
The rest of it was just soul-crushing,
yeah.
awful.
Because of the parking or the crowds or the just douchebaggery of the industry? What was the...
I mean, I guess all of that, it was kind of like, you know, you go to that thing because you want to do press for a new record,
right.
Which we had had a new record come out that week, and we did not, all of the label was here, didn't have a single interview or anything the entire...
Really?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
I was not super stoked about that, but we did get our publicist at the time to get us a... what we called a rap fuck room at some fancy hotel across the river over there.
That is the best description ever.
Because we were staying at a Motel 6
up north. I know, I know the one.
There was one bed, wood floors. I felt like I was in Germany again.
Be happy for those wood floors. Dude, you don't want to see the carpet.
But the room that they got us, sorry to trail off, but this is well worth talking about. The room they got us like had a view of the river. It was also had no beds.
What?
It had a huge circular couch.
Fuck
a
yes.
kitchen and like some kind of dining table. It was like a businessman room.
Damn,
and it was just kind of funny because I slept in the fucking Motel 6.
That rules.
But everybody else had this like shitty party, which I would imagine nobody came to their shitty party.
Well,
it was just them.
That's like, yeah. Still though.
So I do remember we played the Scoot Inn in Austin last year, and zero people.
At the Scoot Inn. Because that's why they do like the Thrasher stuff I saw.
Yeah, it was a Thrasher party.
And
but what happened was three of the bands in the middle of the show canceled, and they refused to just like update. So everybody fucking left. And at the end, there was like maybe 20 just diehard Off of their Heads fans
that's
who were
so
like
Spinal Tap. That's fucking awesome.
They were just like, oh, dude, you guys can't bail. Because we were like, dude,
fuck this.
Let's
right.
get out of here. I just want to go. So we played, and we actually had the funnest show of the whole thing.
That
because
rules.
We were just like, did an all request set.
Nice. Yeah, I went to the Thrasher party there, and it was Fear with Cro-Mags. And during Cro-Mags, this dude got on stage, you know, this old school guy, and he was like, yeah! And he jumped, and no one caught him. And it's outdoors on stone. And his head split like a fucking cantaloupe at a Gallagher show, just like blood shot. And everybody just went, whoa! And just make a hole. And they carried the dude out, and his head was just bleeding like a Vietnam veteran. It was brutal.
That was outside, I assume?
That was outside at the Scoot Inn. And I was there for the infamous... Screeching Weasel show there where Mr. Weasel took issue with a young lady.
That's one of the reasons why I don't want to talk shit about South by Southwest, because I don't want to jump on that train.
We can easily
avoid
that.
But I still, I hate a whole different side of it than that.
Right on.
I didn't want to do any fucking interviews anyway. I don't even know. Sometimes I'm just like, why am I here?
Yeah. Well, thanks for doing our barbecue, man. That was
that was fun.
Thanks.
I remember leaving that show, and we were all just laughing because we were like, what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah.
And I had my window down. I was sitting right where you were. Mm-hmm. And this drunk girl runs up and goes, thank you guys for being musicians. And I looked at her in the eye and just rolled the window up on her while making complete eye contact.
Well, that's a serious musician move. That's what the Eagles would have done.
Everybody in the van was just dying laughing.
I had a buddy of mine who had come straight to the barbecue from a fishing trip. He's like, dude, we brought tuna steaks for everybody. I'm like, that doesn't happen anywhere else at South by. Fucking
tuna steaks?
Yeah, he caught tuna and drove straight to the barbecue and had a fucking freezer in his pickup truck with fish that he had caught for the barbecue. I'm like, it's not that I know it's punk rock, but it doesn't mean bring shit to grill.
That's pretty kick-ass.
But it's awesome, though, right?
Who's going to turn down a tuna steak? That's awesome.
That's fucking Dave Hall. Shout out to Dave Hall. Good guy.
So you just, your altercation comedy group.
Yeah.
We'll call
Thank
you
for not saying troop. I would have killed myself.
It's not a troop.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe it is.
Maybe.
Just three of you.
Yeah. Mike Wiebe and Joe Statz.
Both just got, or both. All
both,
three.
Both.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's all good.
Again, it's the no eating and a
and
few
the
beers.
Alcohol.
At this point in this this program that I do, I think people will understand that I kind of I got some problems. But we were talking real quick about how it's got to be kind of awkward for what you've set yourself up to do is do a punk rock comedy.
Yeah. It can
very,
be.
Very, very often you find yourself doing shows at punk rock shows, which is not the most welcoming.
Nope.
Of of people that you could be, you know,
it depends.
Telling your funny man jokes in front of
my funny stories. I mean, yeah, yes, but I like that challenge, and also, you know, I'm coming from that school of things, so it's like those are also ultimately the people that I feel like relate to me the best, and like I can do a comedy club, right? When I first started, I was super anti-comedy club because I knew the only way to kind of like get the word out was to take the hard path and not do comedy clubs at all. Kind of be like, fuck that. Because comedy clubs initially, and even now, they're inherently lame. You know, there's a degree of date night. Let's go see the comedian and order food. And, you know, you're dealing with a lot. Not everybody who goes that, obviously. Like,
I've never been to a comedy club in my life.
See, there you go.
Every time I see comedy, it's at some other venue, like the hot tub thing that I go to.
Oh, yeah, out in Cali. Yeah.
They just do it in a bar. And
exactly.
It's a great setting, and I love it.
But, you know, I started it in 2008, and back then it was pretty much the Comedians of Comedy and Doug Stanhope and David Cross and Henry Rollins were the only people that were doing stuff outside of the comedy club scene. And I said, well, you know, we could do it in like the punk bars and stuff, and it was hard to convince people to give it a shot, but one, and you know, people were hesitant to give us a shot, because it's nothing worse than bad comedy is the fucking worst, and you can't, you know, and if this dude's doing 15 minutes and he sucks within 2 minutes, you're stuck there listening to this for 15 minutes, which I understand.
Dude, I've seen some bad
it's the worst, so I totally get people's apprehension. So I was like, all right, our job is to go out and kick ass. And I brought comics who were pretty unknown, but I knew were funny. And we murdered every night to whoever was there and charged like $5. And the second tour we booked was the easiest one ever because everybody said, come back immediately, whatever you need. So
that's great.
You know, it wasn't a moneymaker off the bat, but it was the word was out. And so by this point, yeah, it's like, you know,
you're telling the story of what I've done with my band too.
Yeah.
Like,
well,
we've never brought anyone on tour with us. Mm-hmm. I say that loosely. When
I did
I
a
say
week with
never
you.
Brought, but
yeah,
we did bring you, like, because I thought it was a good idea. And like, we always bring bands that like nobody's really ever heard of.
Right.
And it's definitely at some point hurt us where you're supposed to package up and make these cool things. But I was
kinda
just like,
it.
You know what? Fuck that. Like, we've always wanted to do that.
Uh huh.
And that has, at least as I'm sinking in this ship, I'm like, you know what? At least we did what we wanted to do. And like, I'm still going to do that. Fuck it.
Yeah.
And that's why we have the Slow Death with us. I love that band.
I'm excited to see them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird too, because like, you know, for a lot of comics, they're terrified of doing a like between band type thing.
Well, they
which
should
I, which you get, I totally get it, because it's a different mode. You need to fucking get people's attention and then be funny. And if you can't do those two things, you're going to eat shit.
Totally.
Because if you can't own the stage to a point where, you know, Rollins, I opened for Rollins once, and he said to me, he said, you either own the stage or the stage owns you. You know, it's one or the other, which kind of stuck with me, because if you don't go out there and kind of set the bar for getting the crowd's attention, fuck you. You know, like, people are going to start talking, and, you know, it doesn't matter if you have the best material in the world, no one's listening.
You also have to control the room, and if you can't control the room if you're not funny.
Yeah, you need to.
And you need to be smart, and you need to be funny.
You need, like, to be all those things, and it's like fucking free jazz, man. Like, you know, it's
anything can be thrown at you.
You can have your set
metaphorically and
literally.
Exactly, like.
You can have your set, but some of the funniest shit is just the off the cuff stuff that pops out. You know, Mike Wiebe tonight, he busted out some stuff that I never heard him do, and it was on. I guarantee you, it was on the fly, and it killed me.
It was good.
Yeah, it's great. You know,
and especially good because I knew what he was talking about. Mike Wiebe from the Riverboat Gamblers was up doing some stuff, and he was talking about European things,
European
which of course,
touring and whatnot.
Which, of course, I know all about, and I don't think that the majority of the people in the room understood what he was talking about.
But it was an engaging story.
Yeah, it was a good story.
Yeah. So yeah, man, it can be difficult and scary, and it's definitely not for everybody. But you know, it's easier for me now to do that, honestly, than to go and do a show in front of a bunch of middle-aged people on date night. You know,
That would be just as hard to me. Yeah. So another thing that we really get into when I talk to you fools that I have in the band is how there is no such thing as an artist or comedian or musician or anything who isn't out of their mind insane.
Well, yeah.
To some degree. I mean, I'm not saying falling down.
Yeah.
You know, Michael Douglas insane, but like, we're all a little out of our minds.
Dude.
And you opened up with the crack about depression.
Yep.
And like, who's got depression? Where's Ryan?
Yep. Well, I had to give you some sort of shout out, but fuck
it. Of course. But you know what I'm saying.
I totally know what you, I mean, it's, I suffer from depression. I've been, you know.
Do you take the medicine?
You know, I do now. And I take I take half of the smallest dose possible. But I went through a period of time about 2 years ago where I totally crashed. I wouldn't call it a freak out or a breakdown or anything like that, but I totally, it's only now that I'm comfortable talking about it too, but I basically,
nobody is, and I don't get it. It's, I mean, weird, I never was, but like I sing about it all the time.
Right.
But
well, right.
Then
yeah.
I realized even with over the last couple of weeks, I was just like, who cares? Like yeah. We all have it. We all do this.
Well,
same thing.
Varying degrees, but also like some people get depressed and some people, I mean, everyone's been depressed and everyone's had anxiety mm-hmm. in certain degrees. But if you suffer from anxiety and you suffer from depression, it's a different thing.
Yeah.
You know, and like the people who suffer from depression.
There's a difference between depression and not getting a topping you ordered on your pizza.
Just being bummed out. Like everybody gets bummed out. Yeah. Yeah. But like, you know, depression in the point where you literally don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah.
And to me, I mean, I'm no.
I've skipped days.
Right.
I'm like, you know what? Yeah. Today,
yeah,
not
dude.
Happening.
And you know, when I was in the thick of it, I had to do, it was actually during a South By. When some of it was going on, you know, I lost 30 pounds in a month.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. I just stopped eating. I just wasn't hungry. You know, I had super crazy anxiety and stuff. My body just kind of freaked out. And there was, you know, I was having issues with, we had these fucking asshole neighbors. And I was getting into, you know, constant verbal fights with them all the time. And just stressed out all the time. And they had this pit bull in their backyard that was chained up in a cage. And I fucking love dogs. And so I was so frustrated, I couldn't do anything about it. It was constant frustration in my house, you know, which is supposed to be your place to chill out from humanity. You know what I mean? And
that's
so
your safe zone.
Yeah, your safe zone. And I was constantly frustrated and fucking furious. And you know, I don't have a temper, but I get pissed off a lot. I mean,
yeah.
It's a weird thing to say. Like I don't snap. It takes a lot. I have a long fuse when it goes. Look out! But you know, it doesn't really happen. But it. Yeah, it's a different thing. So yeah, man, most comics I know suffer from either depression of some sort or another, definitely a degree of self-loathing. I don't care. I mean, up to
every single stand, like if you don't have that.
Oh yeah.
Like who's a stand-up comedian who doesn't have some? I was
no one
like,
good.
Yeah, nobody good.
Probably not Carlos Mencia.
Even
you know, fucking,
Dane Cook, dude. Even Dane Cook probably
sure.
hates himself.
Well, you know what? He wouldn't have done that Louis episode if he didn't have a degree of I know.
That's true.
You know,
I forgot about that.
He was fucking great in that, and hats off to him for doing that. I'm not a fan, but you know that took some balls to do.
You know who the unknown comic is?
The guy with the bag over his head?
Totally.
Yes.
That guy has to hate him. So.
Of course he does. But, you know, any of those dudes. I mean, Patton Oswalt's been pretty outspoken about his depression.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing, though, too, because the flip of that is you get comics who don't suffer from it going, Patton Oswalt, he's got theaters at his feet. He's got TV deals. Everybody respects him as a comic. How can he be depressed? And I go, I totally get it.
Totally, yeah. Like,
totally
there's no amount of success that you can have in anything that you
know?
Do that will fix it.
Yeah. And to me, it's very biological in that my grandmother suffered from it, and it, you know, skips whatever, and I totally have my anxiety and my depression from my grandmother.
Yeah.
Totally do. And it's, you know.
It happens. It's not embarrassing. It's just kind of it's irritating. And the more you can joke about it, the easier it is to just kind of be like, ah.
Yeah.
That's what's kind of cheered me on to be like, you know what? Maybe I should take some pills that aren't the bad pills.
Well, you know, that's it too. Is like, I didn't, you hear the horror stories about the, you know, Zoloft or what, zombies of like, I don't want fake happiness. Fuck
that's my
that.
Fear.
Or most creative people too, I'm sure you have this, I'm going to take something, I'm going to lose what makes me fucking me and what makes me be creative.
Exactly.
You know, that's a big fear because you're fucking with your brain chemistry.
A lot of people don't want to do that. I just read Rob Delaney's book.
Oh, yeah. I haven't read that yet.
It's great.
Yeah.
I actually have it in here. I'll give it to you if you want.
Awesome.
And he talks about how he was afraid to take that, but he was like, well, I'm either going to kill myself or this is my last chance.
Right.
He said the first drug he took worked, and within 2 weeks he did his first stand-up set.
Well,
and I was like, that's fucking cool, because that's actually contradicts everything that you would think it would do, where they say it inhibits creativity and everything.
Yeah.
Not at all. Apparently, for some people, it calms you down and makes you focus more.
Yeah, I mean, I had a kind of touch-and-go, let's-see-how-it-goes attitude, because I'm like, because this ain't working. You know, mm-hmm. I can't lose it. People were asking me if I was on meth, like, because, I you know, you lose 30 pounds in 3 weeks. you can't blame it all on cutting out carbs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I was visibly, you know, I wasn't going out. I'm a pretty social guy as far as I like to go to shows and stuff and then have my time away from people. But I wasn't going out. I didn't want to. Trying to do comedy, forget it. You know, trying to do stand up and make people laugh and you feel like, forget it. And, you know, it was the type of thing I said, well, I got to try something. And so I took the smallest dose possible of Lexapro and half of that. Like, you can have this pill. I'm like, all right, I'm going to take half of it. They're like, well, it'll take a month to kick in because it slowly raises your serotonin levels.
Yep.
And I said, okay, we'll see how it goes. And after 3 weeks, I noticed the difference. Whereas if I felt, you know, I started eating, things got better. The one downside is I ate too much. So now I feel overweight. Not that I'm a big balloon, but like, you know.
You fat.
I feel fat.
You so fat. Hey, I'd rather be fat and happy than, to a certain degree.
You know what it is? When I felt a normal depression coming on of like, I didn't want to get out of bed tomorrow, it kept it at bay. It kept it like a wall. I knew it was there, but it kept a wall up to the point of not fake happiness, but of a, well, fucking too bad you're going to do something tomorrow. You know, like that type of thing. And it worked.
Well, that's good.
And so aside from that, man, it's, you know.
That's a good story. I mean, like, it is. I don't know anything. I don't take medicine.
Yeah.
I want to, and I'm going to work on that
mainly
when I get
anxiety?
Home. Oh, it's everything.
Everything.
I'm all fucked up.
Well,
but
I also have Xanax.
But I need
Xanax
to
is fantastic
out.
Also, but
I use Xanax as a recreational drug for a long time,
okay.
So I'm a little afraid to take that.
Well,
because I'm a little irresponsible.
Yeah. I have a prescription for it because I used to have panic attacks once in a while, and you know, to the point where I'd pass out. I'd like hit my head, wake up on the floor. Fucking no good. My anxiety has gone way down as I've gotten a little older, but I can theoretically, my prescription, take that twice a day, and I think I take two a week, maybe.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
I just
good.
Like having them on hand, you know. But I hear you, because a lot of people I know who have Xanax get into bad shit. Same with sleep aids; they get too, you know.
Totally, dependent. I'm afraid to take both of those things because I'm a fucking loser. Who
sleep aids
totally
are hypnotics. No one knows how sleep aids work. Fucking, you hear all those crazy stories about people taking crazy, you know, prescription sleep aids and waking up fucking driving their car or something.
Totally. And that's definitely something I would do.
Yeah. Avoid that shit.
Well, I got an email here. Someone seeking a little bit of advice.
Cool.
From us.
Who better to answer
than us?
Lexapro half dose is your answer.
You should take a sleeping pill. All right. From Erica.
Yeah.
I'm just going to read this real terribly because I'm only getting more and more inebriated sitting back here. But here we go. Erica says, I have to accept an award in front of 400 people in 2 weeks.
Uh-huh.
I know it's an honor, and the people who nominated me have no idea of my social anxiety and stage fright. I have learned to cope on a small scale. I don't advertise my issues, and I pass pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I can prepare myself to speak in a room of 30 people with just mild symptoms. But this, just in writing this email, my heart is pounding. I can't breathe. I was thinking some mild anti-anxiety meds, but I'm not sure that I have enough time for them to kick in. Any suggestions?
Wow.
Now, I specifically wanted you to come in to answer this because nobody knows more about anxiety than people who just get up in front of other people.
Well, see, do you get nervous? I never get nervous. I know we discussed this a little bit about you have like apprehension maybe, but once you're on stage, are you nervous?
Once I'm on stage, no, but before.
Well, before you pace and you get in that pre mode, but like I do at least.
Something that happens to me where I'm just like, dude, fuck this. I don't want to do this at all.
Uh-huh, really?
And then when I get up there, it's fine.
Yeah.
And I have a blast, but like I think we've done over like 2,000 shows.
Yeah, I'm sure, dude.
And I still, like tonight, tonight I totally don't care.
Well, you better bet. I'm excited to see you, so fucking.
But what advice do you give to someone who's like, this is their first thing?
Well,
in front of 400 people. I mean,
damn.
What I would say is, who gives a shit? Obviously,
yeah.
But that's the easy way out.
But I mean, if that's their trigger, that, you know, if they get nervous typing that email or talking in front of 30 people starts to make them freak out, 400 is a lot of people. And, you know, the funny, you know, people often ask me, how the fuck do you get up and do that? I've had, you know, bands, people that play to thousands of people say, I don't know how you get up in front of 30 people. And
that's what I said too. Every comedian I've talked to, I was like, you know what? I can play a European festival in front of 6,000 people. And it's like, that's a Saturday. It's funny. I don't give a shit about anything.
Yeah.
And then to get up at an open mic and do something, I would be like, oh no. Oh, hail.
Oh,
no.
I've tried to get you up, motherfucker. I've tried. You've bailed on me a few times. Fucking,
you know,
I might be in town for Fun Fest. And,
I'll bail again.
That's fine. For me, it's the opposite. Cause like when I do Fun Fest, case in point, or Punk Rock Bowling or something, a festival, I mean, Fun Fest, we're at the point we draw 800 to 1,000 people.
Wow.
And that's a lot of motherfuckers to make
that's
laugh.
A ton of motherfuckers.
But I tend to, it's very individualized. Another comic might say that makes me freak out and sweat, but it makes me say, all right, I really got to fucking bring it. You know, and so it gets me pumped up in that way that I need to deliver or shut up and go home. For this person, though, two things. One, the old adage about imagining them naked doesn't work.
that's super dumb. That
super cliche. It doesn't work. So don't let, you know, your grandmother will say that, whatever. The thing to really remember is that most people have a fear of talking in front of other people. Like, I think it's...
Everybody does.
Death is number two. I think public speaking is number one when you took a poll of, you know, biggest fears. Like, people really can relate to that. So if you're nervous up there, no one's going to boo or throw tomatoes, especially if you're getting an award. So take that to heart, that people are rooting for you to do well, and if you're nervous, they're not going to give you shit about it.
People also, like, love nervousness when you receive an award. They think it's adorable.
They think it's adorable.
You know what I mean? Like, when you're like, oh, my God, I don't know. Like,
it's
fine.
Yeah, like, it's contagious as
it's
far
being
as,
humble,
like,
you know?
Joking around. Like, if something funny spontaneously happens, you drop a pin or something, people are going to laugh, and it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Tension breaker. The other thing is, if you do decide to do anti-anxiety stuff,
don't try that right away.
Don't try it that night, because it could make you blah blah blah. But most anxiety things don't take a while to kick in. Like, you don't need to take it for a week for a Xanax to start. Like, if you take a Xanax that day, you'll know it. My advice would be is if you have talk to your doctor if you have time in advance. He'll probably give you like a low dose, like a week's worth of Xanax pills, if you explain what's up. And if you take a half of whatever he prescribes you that morning, I think you'll notice a big difference. You'll be fine. Plus, I'm assuming it's not a fucking 20-minute speech or something. You're probably going up saying thank
That's
you, blah, blah.
That's fairly good advice. But I would also – I would even shy away from a one-time – like, I'm only anxious because of this.
Right.
Like, that's not really a reason to pop a pill.
That's true.
Necessarily.
That's true.
Unless you're an experienced – pill popper, like, then you're like, well, fuck it, I know what I'm doing. But like,
right, yeah, no, that's good advice.
What you're gonna do is you're gonna take that pill, then you're gonna have like a beer or a wine or something, and then you're gonna fuck
and
it.
Then you're Heath then you're Ledger,
gonna, yeah, or worse, Kramer or something. You're gonna say something real fucked,
something that, like, fucked up, right? White power. Thank you for the award,
Erica. Yeah. Do not say white
don't,
power.
Don't
when
say
you
we do not endorse
award.
White power.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I mean. That is a tough one, though, because if you have social anxiety, and especially something where you're, like, if it's a work presentation, you can kind of somehow be sick or shy out of it or talk to your boss. But if you're getting an award, you kind of have to take
it. Man, I hate to say this, but I'm going to say, have a fucking glass of wine.
Mm.
Like, as weird as that sounds, like, that'll chill you out, and it makes you kind of funny, and you're a little buzzy, but, like, you're not drunk.
Yep.
You're not taking pills, and, like, sometimes you're just, like, revel in the fact that, hey, I'm receiving an award.
Right.
People are here to clap for me.
That's exactly right.
So, smile, curtsy, bow, dude, like, and I always say that, dude, I totally curtsy when we have a good
curtsy.
Show. It's funny.
Fucking 1800s. Curtsy.
So there you go, Eric.
There you go. Yeah, just remember they're rooting for you.
Well, JT, we got to get back in and watch
Yeah,
the
you
slow
got a show
death.
To do, man.
I don't have to do a show. I got time, but okay. You want to see the slow death.
I absolutely do.
I'm going to send us out here with a bit from your altercation, dudes. Who,
sweet, man.
Who would you like us to hear?
I'm going to say me, only because my label guy, Dan, who's inside of the show, will yell at me if I don't.
There it is. All right.
So it's from the new record, Hostile Corporate Takeover, by me and the Altercation Pub.
Which
comedy
is
tour.
On what comedy
on
label?
Stand Up Records.
Which is based out of?
Minneapolis.
Oh, shit. Weird, I didn't even know that. That's insane.
With cover art by Raymond Pettibon on limited edition vinyl, blah, blah, blah. And you can get the digital kids. So yeah, this is from the sold out show we recorded last year.
Awesome. Go to standuprecords.com.
Standuprecords.com, and you can get
our boy Dan will send you.
He'll probably send you stickers and cool shit. But yeah, the vinyl's going fast, and we only did vinyl in digital download. So, blah blah blah.
All right, JT Habersett, thanks you
man.
For coming on the show.
Anytime, jtcomedy.com for all dates.
We out.
But I like metalheads. I'm a punk rock guy, but I like metalheads, and a metalhead is cool because a metalhead you can do high fives and drink Jaeger, but at some point I'm gonna make fun of you for liking Kiss. That's just how it works out. It's like, just how it works out. You can bust my balls for the Casualties and we're even, but that's just how shit kind of works out. But I got schooled by not only a metalhead, but probably the most famous comedian metalhead in the world, which I did. I was lucky enough to do a show with a guy named Brian Posehn. You guys know Brian Posehn? Yeah, yeah, Brian's a fucking great guy. And we were doing a show together, and we're hanging out before the show, and he was like, you do the punk comedy thing. I'm like, right. I'm like, obviously, you're the metal guy, right. And then we started having a cred war. And he threw down, it was like we both had lifesavers. His was way bigger cred lifesaver than mine. But he was like, so what have you done lately? I'm like, oh, shit. He's like calling me out on my, okay, all right. I got to represent the entire scene. No big deal. Guy who's been on TV more than me. All right, yeah. Like, yeah, I did some shows with, you know, Henry Rollins. You might have heard of him. He's like, oh, cool, fucking Hank. I'm like, oh, way to fucking pull the nickname, you dick. All right. I'm like, what have you done? I hear you do festivals and stuff. He's like, oh, yeah, funny you should mention that. I just got back from doing some festivals in Europe with the Melvins and Slayer and Skeleton Witch. And I was like, Oh, that's pretty cool. Fucking love the Melvin. That's pretty cool. I'm thinking to myself. It's like, you do festivals too, right? I hear it. I'm like, oh yeah, I just got done with doing a stretch in the Vans Warped Tour with Cute Is What We Aim For. Fuck me. Lost. I had nothing. Because what kind of man forms a band with a name like Cute Is What We Aim For? That's why I hate everyone younger than me. Who the fuck? Who does that shit? There's only one type of band that's allowed to even have that name, in my 100% incorrect and not so humble opinion. If you're one of those insane Norwegian death metal bands with a great sense of irony, like if your name is Warduke and you sleep in grave dirt and your hobbies include like burning down churches by first lighting your dick on fire and running inside to teabag the priest, and the name of your band is Cute Is What We Aim For, I'm buying your shirt. But if you're some 20-year-old trust fund douchebag in a neon headband who's never heard of the Dead Boys, out promoting your new hit single, My Vagina's Bashful, Let's Hold Hands. That shit gets changed really quick to You Are What I Aim For, because I'm pretty fucking positive I'm going to beat you to death with the Motorhead box set. I'm just saying, man. I'm too old. I'm 36. I don't care. And when I do these festivals, it's fun because I inevitably become guy that knows shit because I'm a mister now. I'm Mr. Yeah, sir. I'm a sir to 16-year-olds. And so that gives me license to fuck with their dreams, which is what I do. And I was on the West Coast doing a festival, and a 15-year-old kid came up to me. Very nice kid. Seemed sincere. And he was like, hey, excuse me, sir. I'm going to fuck with you now. Go ahead. Bring it. What stage is Save the Day on? I said, oh yeah, Saves the Day. Yeah, yeah, they died. yeah, they're on their way here doing the speed limit because you can't speed or save the day. It's one or the other. And there was a vegan squirrel standing on a Bible in the middle of the road, and they swerved their Scooby-Doo mystery van to avoid it and hit a sunflower and exploded into sprinkles on contact. This is so tragic. Nothing but date books and capes all over the road. So there's the day, fucking. And he cried, and I had a good laugh, and I tell that story now. Because fuck him, I don't care. Don't care.
So there you go. There's JT Habersett, my friend, who does the Altercation punk rock comedy tour. A good dude. I think he's funny. It was cool to hear him talk about all that stuff, which I knew, but maybe you didn't. I suggest that you check him out if he's ever in town. He's a funny guy to go see. and a funny guy to have a couple drinks with. So that about does it for this week. I was going to get into some stuff, but I just don't feel like it right now. And I don't have to if I don't want to. Plus, you know who's playing in Los Angeles tonight? You know who it is? Well, it's Thursday, so I'm assuming this comes out on Monday. So it's all a farce. Hop Along is playing in Los Angeles tonight, and they are one of my favorite bands. I'm going to try and get Frances to talk to me for the show. I heard she's sick and she doesn't want to in the first place, but we'll see what we can do. Hopefully she will. But next week, I have my friend Frank Turner, the rock British. Well, I must say he's British. The British rock god Frank Turner was in town for the Coachella Music Festival, and they played the Ellen DeGeneres show, which is fucking, I gotta say, that's incredible in and of itself. But I was able to get Frank to buy me food and then sit in my van and drink beer. And I feel like I kind of pissed him off a little bit. So whether you like Frank or not, he gets a little frustrated with me, as he always does. And that's our friendship. I love the guy. He will be next week. What else? The website, again, go to anxiousandangry.bigcartel.com. Make sure and pick up your flexi disc of that song I played last week, Harsh Realms by Laura Jane Grace. There are not a million of them, so get on that quick. Get a couple. If you order two shirts, I'll give you two flexis. It's that simple. And who knows? I might throw something else in there with it. What else? That's about it, man. Stay sane. I have so many emails that we need to address. I might do two episodes next week just so I can catch up. So if you wrote in, I'm sorry. I didn't reply. I'm getting to it. It's been a very busy week. So also, I'd like to have other people start doing the very intro before the song kicks in. So if you have an idea or you want to be some hilarious monster, call 1-800-565-3250 and shoot me your best pitch for an intro, and I might play it. Who knows? You never know. That's 1-800-565-3250. Give me a call. Tell a story. Ask for some advice. Let's see. I might have Kyle Kinane soon, so if you have any Kyle Kinane questions, shoot that to that number or email me at anxiousandangry@gmail.com. Todd Congelier, take me out. Art was used with artist permission because it's